Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi. Today, we are talking about sleep. I met with Marley Boyle, a respiratory therapist and sleep specialist who lives in Nova Scotia, Canada. Marley co-owns a sleep clinic, and she specializes in helping people with ADHD improve their sleep. This episode is one that you're really going to want to listen to because we all should, as Marley says, start with sleep. Sleep can be one of those things we kind of brush off, but actually improving your sleep will have a beneficial impact on all areas of your life. And the things that you can do to improve your sleep aren't really all that difficult. I mean, I know you can't see me right now, but if you could, you'd see me sporting my new amber lens glasses. You'll hear us talk about them, and I have to say, Marley is right. They really do make me sleepy. So listen today to learn about some relatively easy things you can do to make changes to your current sleep situation. You'll also learn about sleep apnea and how important it is to address this, differences in circadian rhythms and what to do about them, how cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia can help, and we also talk about supporting kids who have difficulty sleeping. Okay, folks, now on to the show. Hey, Marley. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Hannah.
Yeah. Could you introduce yourself?
Absolutely. So my name is Marley Boyle, and I am a registered respiratory therapist, and I am certified in clinical sleep health, and I'm in Canada. and I'm a co-founder of my company called SleepWorks, and we provide sleep education, sleep coaching, sleep counseling, and sleep therapy to everyone. But my specialty is within the ADHD community and helping perfect. People with their sleep.
You're so just the perfect guest. I was just telling you right before we started recording, I just recorded yesterday with, I'm not going to be able to say his name. So, okay, his name is Roberto, Roberto Olivardia, but I was telling him yesterday when we recorded that I, in my head and also out loud to my husband, who I was telling, I've been calling him Roberto.
So, I love that.
So yesterday I've had a really hard time. I actually ended up calling him Roberto because I couldn't just say Roberto.
Anyway, he loved it.
Yeah, he said he did. He did. So anyway, I was speaking with Roberto and we had a really great conversation about the impact of sleep and lack of sleep and sleep apnea on ADHD symptoms and how closely they're connected. And I was just so excited to have this conversation today. So I think these two episodes are going to drop concurrent or like in order. So that will be really good. If anybody heard the conversation with Roberto a couple of weeks ago, then you'll be glad to hear today's conversation with Marley, because we're going to talk about that connection between ADHD and sleep and what the heck we can do about it, because I know it's a challenge for lots and lots of people with ADHD. So
absolutely. Yeah.
So how did you get there? How did you get to the point of being an expert in ADHD and sleep?
Oh, great question. I took a completely convoluted loop or path to get here. But so as a respiratory therapist, most people wouldn't probably think of them associated with being in sleep. But I worked in critical care in the hospital for about a year, and I hated doing shift work. I couldn't function. I spent 7 years in school, and then you do all this training, and then they're like, okay, now go do this, but stay up all night and do this. Oh, and I just remember being like, oh my gosh, I don't think I can do this. I can't even think straight. And now I have to look after people. I'm like, someone's going to get hurt. I got to get out of this. So ironically, I got a job at a sleep lab, and it was a day job. So I was like, I'll take it. I did a little bit of a practicum in a sleep lab during my schooling, and it was fine. I had no great interest in it, but I did have a lot of interest in being able to sleep at night again. So I went to the sleep lab. I crossed the country, took a job on the East Coast of Canada, and worked in a sleep disorder clinic and a sleep disorder lab. And working there, I fell in love with sleep. It was everything I had wanted healthcare to be, but I wasn't getting working in the hospital. You actually get to see people completely heal and get well when they improve their sleep. You get to see people come off of medications that they thought they've had to be on for their whole lives. You get to see their quality of life improve, and like people get to play with their grandkids again, and all these things that are so rewarding and that I really wanted from healthcare. And so I fell in love with it, and I was obnoxious about it with everyone that I talked to. I'm like, oh my gosh, do you know this about sleep? And do you know this about sleep? And I really inundated my best friends, Alexia and Leo, with it. No, Alexia was in corporate business in Alberta and oil and gas. And my other friend, Leah, she was a nurse, and she was a lifelong poor sleeper. And we had lived together in university, and I remember her never sleeping, and or at least not at nighttime. And so I was always talking to them about that. And then the pandemic hit, and I had been doing a lot of sleep stuff for fun, as far as like public speaking and talking to different corporations about the importance of sleep, peddling sleep to anyone that would listen, really. It's a hobby, which makes me sound really lame, but it was just what I love to do. And then so Lexi and Leah really kind of adopted my dream, and they helped me form a business. So we co-founded a sleep business together. And originally in the pandemic, it was just to start helping shift workers. So we had all done shift work and realized, like, oh, we don't learn how to manage shift work. And all of our frontline workers were burning out at a rate that was faster than we had ever seen. So we started with, helping our colleagues with shift work, and then that just evolved and evolved, and now here we are doing lots of different areas of sleep. But during this, I've always struggled a little bit with my executive functions. I didn't have a diagnosis of ADHD, but my mentor, my business mentor, he actually has ADHD, and he runs an ADHD executive coaching business. And he asked me to project manage a little project for them. And I did that. And I was like, this group of people is my people. Like, I love these people. And I feel like I fit in here. And so, working with Keith and his group, I started to be like, oh, there's such a huge overlap between being sleep deprived and having ADHD. And in fact, I nerded out really hard and made this Venn diagram of the overlap of symptomology of ADHD symptoms and sleep deprivation. And like, almost every single thing overlaps because it impacts our executive functions, everything from our memory and working memory to our emotional regulation. So I was like, oh, I'm an expert at ADHD because I'm an expert at sleep. And I kind of just made that leap. But then I started working with more people with ADHD because there's such a high prevalence of sleep problems in that community. Then I've had a couple of people be like, have you ever had an assessment done? So in my mid-30s, I got diagnosed with ADHD, which was a surprise to no one in my life, apparently. And it really just kind of amplified my passion to continue to work with more people with ADHD, and realize like we don't, it's not a life sentence to be a bad sleeper. If you are neurodivergent, you can use some tools. We might have to put a little extra discipline into it, but it's certainly possible to be a good sleeper when you have ADHD. So I just started working with ADHD. I partnered with the Adult ADHD Center out of British Columbia, and we do, with every diagnosis, they get a free individual sleep consultation
That's
and a sleep
so
plan.
cool.
Yeah, really trying to democratize sleep for everybody. And then we've partnered up with Beyond ADHD, who also provides diagnoses and treatment. And we provide cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia adapted for ADHD. So it's been a passion and the most rewarding experience. And right before we popped onto this podcast, Hannah, I was actually in a conversation with one of my clients that has ADHD. I'm like, oh, this is perfect. This is like prep for the podcast. But it's certainly been, one of it's the most rewarding experience to be like, you know what? I can help you with this because we feel so helpless.
That's what
I really can't say his name without saying it. Roberto was saying that he has ADHD, and anyone who listened to the episode already will hear this, have heard this already. But he was saying that it alleviated so many of his ADHD symptoms once he got this. He started using the CPAP machine. I'm just
Yeah,
going to nerd
CPAP.
out for a second. So he was telling me that when you get tested for sleep apnea, he didn't know he had sleep apnea because he didn't do the gasping thing, but you're supposed to have like less than 20 events in an hour or something like that. Is that some kind of cutoff? He had 98 in an hour,
Wow.
and they got him in right away. And they told him if he hadn't have addressed it, he probably would have died by the time he was in his early 50s because his heart just couldn't
Absolutely.
handle it anymore. And so he
Yeah.
said his life is so much better now. His ADHD symptoms are not completely gone, of course, but definitely alleviated and
Yeah, we can
changed
manage.
so much.
Yeah, we can manage some big ADHD symptoms with fixing our sleep. And I mean, that's why I fell in love with it, is exactly what Roberto's story was. You get to see people change and get this huge like alleviation of all these symptoms. But certainly, I mean, with sleep apnea, and that's where I started with sleep, was in the sleep apnea world, seeing that get addressed and people's whole health changes literally overnight, no pun intended. But it does. And the executive functions can be restored by getting proper sleep to some degree for certain. But yeah, sleep apnea is a major one. And in the general population, it affects about 4 to 6% of people, but in the ADHD population, it's about a third of us, so 33%.
So my husband is right, just yesterday had a doctor's appointment to pursue getting tested for sleep apnea, and I think that he does, and it's so interesting because he has been tired since I've known him. We've been together for over 20 years, and he's just been tired, and he also has a form of your rheumatoid arthritis. So we always just assumed it was the arthritis, but he's actually been in remission for a few years now, and it makes me think, oh, and he's still tired, so maybe it's not the arthritis, and maybe it. I'm hoping that it's something that can be that can be
Yeah.
addressed through that.
Sleep
So.
apnea is very treatable. And, CPAP is the gold standard treatment, wearing that mask that splints open your airway. And a lot of people, especially neurodivergent people, if we have any sensory issues, we're like, there's no way I'm going to be able to do that. But like, I encourage everyone to give it a try. It is so worthwhile to try to get that treatment. And if CPAP doesn't work for you, or work for, in your case, your husband, I encourage people to, look into the alternative treatments, because some treatment is better than no treatment at all. And often with CPAP, the clinics are very much focused on just the CPAP therapy. And if you don't fit into that box, sometimes they don't offer alternatives, but it's certainly worth pursuing if you can't tolerate the CPAP machine. It's because some treatment's better than none. Some sleep is better than none.
I mean, even if you, I imagine that the if even the small improvement that you can make to your sleep has a greater impact on your life. Like the it magnifies the impact.
Absolutely. I always think about sleep as being like the high value health behavior that makes all of our other health initiatives more effective. If we're sleeping well, then if we're going to try to do exercise every day, it's a lot easier if we're well rested. Diet, I mean, we think about being sleep deprived. Our body will physiologically crave sugar and carbohydrates because it wants that fast energy, and then our judgment's impaired. So of course we're going to choose maybe not the best foods. And then we have hormones that make us feel hungrier more and not full. So it can really sabotage us when we're trying to improve other areas of our health. So I'm a big proponent of start with sleep. It's way easier to go to bed than it is to go to the gym.
That's really funny. funny. Or to like make yourself eat like a super healthy meal
Yeah.
every time.
Let's start
Yeah.
with sleep.
Yeah, I like
It's
that.
a great place.
That's a good slogan.
Yeah.
Great. So let's start with sleep. I mean, a lot of people who have ADHD are probably listening and saying, "Yes, yeah, it's actually not easier for me to go to sleep. It's easier for me to go to the gym."
Absolutely.
So how can, how can we address that, and what are some things that come up for people with ADHD?
Great question. So I do see a lot of people, and it's usually the same four things over and over again. So the first one is the timing of our sleep. We tend to be night owls. It's about
Big time.
75% of us. Yeah, we tend to be night owls, and we think of it almost as like a character flaw, but it's actually our genetics. It's our chronotype. It's the expression of when our circadian rhythm, that master clock running in the background that controls a whole bunch of processes. That's when it's expressed. And there's lots of research to show that, for a neurodivergent person or someone with ADHD, our circadian rhythm is naturally delayed about 90 minutes later than a neurotypical person. And then we have some ADHD behavior sometimes that really perpetuate that night
Yes.
owlhood. I've had lots of clients who are like, "Are we supposed to be nocturnal?" And no, we're not. So really what I see a lot with the circadian rhythm is that delay in that, and then some behaviors that really exaggerate that as well. But we have kind of a, if we look at a regulation model of sleep, so we have two regulators of our sleep. One is our sleep pressure. So sleep pressure is just basically how long we're awake for. The longer we're awake for, the more likely we are to fall asleep. So this often happens for a lot of us. We stay awake for a long period of time and eventually we crash. That's our sleep pressure kind of hitting that maximum spot where we're like, "Okay, I gotta go to sleep." And then we sleep and that sleep pressure is cleared out. For most people with ADHD, sleep pressure isn't the problem. We're kind of tired all the time. The regulation of that is a little bit off as far as like when we're sleeping and things like that. But for the most part, we have plenty of sleep pressure. The cognitive load it takes us to do anything, we're building up sleep pressure all day long. The other regulator of our sleep would be our circadian rhythm, so that master clock that's running in the background. That's where I see most of the issues that we're having, and it tends to be lifelong for most of us. The circadian rhythm, we think of it controlling our sleep-wake cycle. That's commonly what it's, referred to as, but it controls a whole bunch of systems. So it controls our digestion, when we feel hungry, our body temperature, hormone release, fertility. Affects a whole lot of things. So a lot of us with that night owl tendency also don't like to eat breakfast first thing in the morning and things like that. And it's because those systems aren't awake yet. So it's the delay in the circadian rhythm. So we don't see that aligning with the morning lark society that the world wants us to fit into. So typically what happens for a lot of us is we can't fall asleep, at a reasonable hour to get enough sleep before our alarm clocks are going off in the morning to wake us up to start, addressing our morning responsibilities that have been constructed by the early bird society. So we end up being short on sleep, and or we struggle to wake up in the morning. We're hitting the snooze button, we're late, all those things that can really kind of perpetuate some of the stigmas that also are associated with ADHD. So that delay in that circadian rhythm is really the big culprit for most people, is not being able to sleep when our body wants us to sleep. And then some of our behaviors make it a little bit harder to get that back on track. But so I use some pretty basic tools to help people get their, light and dark therapy. Light and darkness are some of the biggest governors of the timing of our circadian rhythm. And although we can't, it won't change our genetics to make us, want to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go for a run. We're not going to be those people. It can influence our circadian rhythm so we can fall asleep earlier, and wake up earlier and make our lives a little bit easier. Because a lot of people with ADHD, and if you say this to neurotypical people, they typically don't get it, but we are tired at night, but we're not sleepy.
Yes,
Yeah.
I
And
feel
so
that
we're like,
deeply.
We are tired, but where's the sleep? And so when we advance our circadian rhythm to help us get sleepy at the same time that we're tired, our lives get a little easier. And so those are some of the strategies that I work with clients to help them align their circadian rhythm.
Okay, so say we've set the alarm and we're being very diligent and disciplined and actually going to bed at, some time earlier than we normally would, whatever that is. There's no judgment here at all. Whatever time you go
That's
to bed
right.
is fine. And then you get in bed and then your default mode network, which is a big part of our brain. If you have ADHD, that default mode network does not shut down as for a person who does not have ADHD, their default mode network is probably shutting down and saying, okay, it's time to go to bed. But for many people, it is still up and running and you're thinking about all sorts of stuff. What are some things that we can do to kind of turn it off and to actually be able to fall asleep?
Oh, great question. This goes back to that circadian rhythm and getting sleepy at the same time that we're tired. So one of the easiest tools, because at this point, if we're going to bed and having difficulty falling asleep and we're setting our alarm and still waking up in the morning, chances are we're operating with quite a level of sleep deprivation. So our executive functions might not be optimized at this point. So I like to incorporate some things that don't require a lot of our executive functions to improve our sleep. So then once our sleep improves, then we're more likely to be able to kind of make better routines around our sleep and build those habits. But to start, it's in training that circadian rhythm. So the first tool that I recommend, and I think everybody should be using this because of our artificially lit environments, are amber-lensed glasses. So basically, the biggest governor of the timing of our circadian rhythm and getting sleepy at night when we're not just tired, but we want to be sleepy, is if we watch the sunset and we watch the sun come up in the morning. That information from the sun would translate, it goes through our eyes and translates to information in our body about the time of day, and it entrains our circadian rhythm. So when we put on amber-lensed glasses about 2 hours before we want to go to bed, or even a little earlier, when we put those lenses in front of our eyes, no matter what the lighting is in our environment, it absorbs that short wavelength of light, that's bright white blue light, and it gives our body that signal the sun is setting. So we get that down regulation process that we're often not getting until, we've been laying in bed for 2 hours. So we put that on, we put those amber lenses on. It's great because we don't have to task switch, just pop on your lenses. If you're at your computer, dim the lights, but keep going. It doesn't involve a lot of our executive functions to put those glasses on and just keep doing what we're doing. And we're getting such a strong environmental signal to our body about what time it is that our body can start that down regulation process. And so a lot of my clients with ADHD actually call their amber glasses their sleepy glasses, which I
Nice.
love. And putting our technology away, of course, if we could dim out all the lights in our homes and put all of our technology away a couple hours before bed, that would be fantastic. But like realistically and pragmatically, that's not going to happen. Not every single night. I know if I put my phone away even a half an hour before bed and I close my laptop, I'm like, oh my goodness, I am the epitome of discipline. I deserve an award.
That's right.
So using amber lenses really does help filter out a lot of the artificial blue light in our environment that really doesn't help our circadian rhythm at all. And then, so the glasses can be a really easy, inexpensive investment to get the entrainment of our circadian rhythm. And then conversely, in the morning, if we all lived in Southern California, that would be fabulous. We could go outside and watch the sun come up. I live in Canada and it is cold and it is dark most of the winter. So we use bright light therapy lamps. So bright light therapy lamps, they used to be really expensive. Now they're really accessible. You can get them as cheap as $20 now. You can get them at Costco, those kind of things. And they're 10,000 lux of brightness. So they hit a therapeutic level of brightness that makes our eyes believe we're watching the sun come up in the morning. So what I usually recommend for my clients with ADHD that are struggling with waking up in the morning, maybe we're hitting the snooze button too many times, which is a really common thing for a lot of my clients, is to put their bright light therapy lamp right on their nightstand. And when that alarm goes off, the first alarm, because we usually set multiple, to turn off the alarm and turn on the bright light therapy lamp, roll in the direction of your nightstand. We're pretty groggy at that point, and just indirectly take in some of that light for about 20 minutes. It can make all the difference in the world. And then we're
That's
going to
cool.
sleep better that night. Yeah. We feel better. We feel more alert and awake, but also it's that starts to entrain our circadian rhythm. So our brain is also going, oh, about 16 hours from now, I should be starting that down regulation process. And then we put on those orange lenses, there's those amber lenses, and our body gets that signal. So it makes things a lot easier without us requiring a lot of like planning and a lot of steps that we could miss out on. Or I know for myself, if I set a routine and I'm not sleeping well, I could do it 4 days in a row. And then on the fifth day, I don't even know that I've had a routine.
Yeah, right. Well, that's funny because I was just thinking when we first met a couple of months ago, you were telling me about the amber glasses, and I was like, I'm gonna get them. And then I completely forgot about it until right now.
Until now, yeah. So another little reminder, Hannah, is get some orange glasses. They
I
are a
am
life
gonna write it
changer.
down right now. Glasses.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They make a difference.
Cool.
And
I'm
they're an easy
excited to
tool to
try.
use.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely. They're a really easy, simple tool to use. And then once we start feeling that regularity of, okay, I'm sleepy at night now, and it's a lot harder for us to ignore sleepiness and stay up than it is for us to ignore being tired. We're tired all the time. We're used to it. We can push
Yeah.
our bedtime
That's right.
forever.
Yeah.
But sleepiness is kind of that overwhelming, drowsy feeling. Our brain is slowing down. We are feeling that pull to our beds. So it's a little harder to ignore and a little easier to listen to and send ourselves to bed on time when we are getting that signal.
I love that. Thank you. So, my colleague, Sean Potts, who's my editor and producer, he was sharing with me that he did some CBTI, which you mentioned earlier. And so I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about that. And the one thing that I remember that he told me that has really helped me is that if I ever do have trouble sleeping, is that to tell yourself it's okay, you're going to be okay tomorrow. And that kind of takes some of that can help take some of that anxiety away about not getting enough sleep.
Absolutely. That is great advice. And I'm so happy to hear that anyone has taken CBTI because it is the first line treatment for chronic insomnia. It's the gold standard and it's very rarely offered. It is something that I offer. I actually partnered up with a registered counseling therapist so people can get it covered
Oh,
through their
cool.
insurance now, which is wonderful. But CBTI, and not worrying about your sleep is a great advice because what happens just the nature of our delayed circadian rhythm is we have this conditioned arousal. We have this experience over and over again of getting into our bed. We know we're not going to be able to fall asleep. And so even if we are really tired, sometimes just the threat of like, what kind of night am I going to have? Am I going to be able to fall asleep? All of those things actually drive up our stress response, and our body kind of perceives the worrying about not sleeping as a threat, which perpetuates our inability to sleep. So that is the first component of the CBTI program that I do is cognitive restructuring. And so it is really common for us with these learned experiences of, over and over again, not being able to sleep. It's really normal human reaction to start worrying about it, right? So we can worry about our effects on our health. So am I going to get sick because I'm not sleeping? Am I going to be able to, am I going to get a cold? Am I going to get dementia? We have a lot of different thoughts. I've had a client that was worried she was just going to die. She's like, intellectually, I know that I'm going to survive, but I feel like I'm going to die from not sleeping. Or we start worrying about our performance the next day. So we anticipate what's next. How am I going to get through the day if I'm not getting enough sleep? Tomorrow's going to be miserable. And then the third area that we start worrying about typically is our subjective estimates of how much we're sleeping versus objective, which when things are stressful, time flies when we're having fun, but it slows down when we're not. And so our perception of time, it can feel like we're laying there all night long. And maybe it's only been an hour. So we start doing the countdown. Okay, if I fall asleep now, I'll get 6 hours. If I fall
Oh,
asleep
yes,
now, I'll get 5 hours.
insomnia math.
The insomnia math, absolutely. And so these thoughts, although they're totally normal human reactions to not being able to sleep, they actually are counterproductive to being able to sleep because our body's perceiving that as a threat. So one of the best techniques is to try not to worry about it. I mean, that's a lot easier said than done. But I always say, as people with ADHD and these long histories of not being able to sleep, we have become trained professionals at getting through the day with no sleep. We have
Yes.
so much evidence from our life that we will be fine if we have one more night of poor sleep. And so, even though it doesn't seem super positive to tell ourselves it's okay if I don't sleep at all, it takes the stress off of us enough that most likely we will be able to sleep. So trying to sleep never works. There was even a great study done on people that were self-proclaimed great sleepers, and the scientists brought them into the lab. They said, okay, we're going to time you, see how long it takes you to fall asleep. And sure enough, every single person fell asleep in under 15 minutes. And they're like, okay, these are great sleepers. We're going to bring you back tomorrow night, and whoever can fall asleep the fastest wins a cash prize. And the result, nobody could fall asleep. So we can't try. It's something we kind of have to set ourselves up to do and then let it happen to us. And so sometimes, as like type A overachievers and things like that, we are trying so hard and it's backfiring on us. So we worry about it. So that's one component of CBTI that is really effective, and it's kind of fundamental to making the change because we've had that experience so often. Then we get into a lot of sleep scheduling. How do we schedule our sleep? And then the program that I do is also adapted for people with ADHD because Sarah, the counseling therapist that I work with, she also has ADHD, and we recognize, there's some unique challenges for us that a typical CBTI program doesn't always address. So we do some sleep scheduling, or some programs call it sleep restriction therapy. What we have found in our practice is most people don't need to restrict their sleep when you have ADHD. We're already sleep restricted. It's the sleep regularity that we need. So regulating that sleep time for us, and using those tools like the Amber Lens classes and bright light therapy to help that make that a little easier on us. And then we teach relaxation techniques, which I think can be a superpower in today's world for absolutely anybody. We are all desperate for that off switch for sleep, but we're not born with that off switch. We actually can develop it through relaxation practices, which becomes really, really important through, there's going to inevitably be stress in our lives, and having a poor night's sleep is normal when there's stress. But being able to employ a technique that our nervous system can relax and we can set ourselves up for some rest is a superpower at this point.
I've been going to yoga recently, and at the end when we do Shavasana, where we just lie there and then she does a little bit of a guided relaxation, I either fall asleep or almost fall asleep every time. And we're only there for a few minutes.
4 minutes.
I don't even know how long it is. Yeah, it's probably like 4 minutes. Yeah. And I'm just, it's like magic.
It is magic, and that becomes a practice. It becomes like something that you can, the thing that you're doing is you're practicing it in the daytime when there's not pressure on you to fall asleep. And that's the best way to learn those techniques for sleep. Don't even start by practicing them at bedtime. That's often a mistake that we'll make is, okay, I'm stressed out. I'm going to learn how to do box breathing right now. And it's going to backfire. But if we practice in the daytime when there's low pressure on us, our body's going to learn that skill, and then we can start using it for sleep. And then it's going to be effective for us.
I love
So,
that.
yeah. And relaxation is not easy for everyone. Myself, when you talk about Shavasana, I used to be the person that at the end of the yoga class, when we'd have to lie there for 4 minutes and relax, I would get up and be like, oh, I have to pee and leave. So it certainly is a practice. And so, my advice for anyone that's like, meditation's not for me, relaxing's not for me, is start small. Start with 30 seconds. Start small because it is a practice and it becomes a skill. It's not something that just happens naturally for all of us.
I was just I do a lot of that with my clients. We work on that, making sure that your emotional regulation strategies are have been practiced, like what you said, when you're not already stressed. So when just throughout your day here and there, and it really does make a difference. And
Absolutely.
and I was just thinking, so I think I've been back to yoga now for about I don't know, maybe 6 months. And I'm thinking, oh, it's actually only recently that I've been falling asleep during, or almost falling asleep during Shavasana. In the beginning, it was difficult. It was hard to lie there. So the practice is, I am getting better at it.
Yes, you are. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's something, we have to practice those skills. It doesn't come naturally. And then another component of CBTI that I always like to tell people, especially us with ADHD, is in our program specifically, and I think in a lot of CBTI programs, we don't start with sleep hygiene. At the point when people usually come for sleep therapy, they have tried all the things on Google.
All the things. Yeah, they're desperate.
Desperate. They have tried putting their phone away. They know that's not going to fix insomnia. So we don't even talk about that stuff until the last session of CBTI after the sleep is fixed. And I think that's important for people to know is sleep therapy isn't just someone giving you advice, put your phone away and do the, relax at night. That's what you'll get off of Google. And those things are, I see sleep hygiene as kind of the cherry on top after the insomnia has been corrected.
So when I don't know if we have any listeners here who have just had a baby, but I remember right after both my kids were born, I had extreme insomnia where I just couldn't sleep. Like no matter what, I couldn't sleep. Is that common?
Yeah, I mean, whether it's ability or opportunity, sometimes a mixture of both, but that is really common. I mean, new moms, you have that increased level of anxiety that maybe you've never experienced at that level before. We have a lot of hormone disruption. We have a lot of factors that can really precipitate and perpetuate that insomnia. Postpartum is a difficult time for anyone, but layer on sleep deprivation and it makes everything even worse. And I do hear that a lot from clients. And sometimes what happens is, they don't get help for their sleep in that moment. It's postmenopause or later in life, and it's almost like a PTSD of thinking back to, oh my gosh, remember when I had babies and I couldn't sleep at all, and the fear of going through that again, and the threat of that, and then they end up in another cycle of insomnia because that remembering and trying to avoid that going back down that path again can be so triggering again. So it certainly can be a traumatic event when we're going through that and we can't sleep. And then even when we get through it in the future, the worrying about getting back to that place again can impair our sleep. And that's kind of the nature of chronic insomnia for a lot of people.
Oh, I really, really can relate deeply to that because every once in a while, I haven't had this experience in a few years, but I would get back into like a phase where I couldn't sleep, and it did feel like almost like PTSD, and I would immediately go back to right after my babies were born, and then go to that sort of catastrophic thinking like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to sleep again.
I'm never going to be able to sleep again. Yeah, that's exactly it. And that's where that restructuring of those thoughts and challenging those thoughts can be so helpful in the moment is kind of identifying, okay, well, I'm probably going to get some sleep tonight. Or even if I don't sleep tonight, I'll probably sleep better tomorrow night. Or I've gotten through a few days like this before and I'm going to be okay. Even though it doesn't feel like, yeah, rah, rah, I'm a great sleeper, it still will help kind of short circuit that cycle, that loop of insomnia that, or of anxiety that we get about insomnia, that loop that plays in our brain, like, oh no, I'm not going to sleep. And what if I don't sleep? And then I have this and this and this to do tomorrow. So yeah, employing that technique when we have those moments, which are totally normal human reactions, employing those techniques can be so helpful. And long-term, they can be helpful more so than a sleeping pill can.
I have found that if I don't allow myself to complete the sentence, oh my gosh, I think I'm not going to be able to fall back asleep. As long as I don't let myself have that complete thought, then I do okay.
There you go. You're short-circuiting that thought yourself.
Yes, I'm like,
Yeah,
no,
it
don't think it. Don't think it. You're going to be
works.
fine.
It's not true.
It's not true.
It's
All right. So, can we, some, I mean, I kind of want to ask you for your top sleep hygiene tips,
not true. Sure.
but I also want to encourage listeners not to just jump to those. If like Marley said, it's what comes up on the last day. So if you're really struggling, it sounds like that's not the place to start. The place to start is to really just reach out for help and
Absolutely.
try to find someone that you can work with to.
Yeah, and sleep therapy is becoming more and more accessible. I mean, we've done a big push on sending out free programs and things like that, just to get the awareness that this is something that exists. There are alternatives to sleeping pills and better alternatives that work longer and maybe even more effective and really address the underlying causes of the insomnia. So if it's a chronic problem and it's not just like, I think I could do better with my sleep, but it's like you have that anxiety around sleep. You have those sleep thoughts that are pretty much the hallmark of chronic insomnia, looking at like, I'm never going to be able to sleep. Then absolutely reach out for help. There are apps, there are sleep therapists. There's lots of different programs available that will actually address what's going on. And then the sleep hygiene, like I said, that can be the cherry on top. That can be what takes your sleep from like good to great. But sleep hygiene has very little efficacy for improving insomnia, because it is that learned conditioning that we have to undo. So if it's a big problem, if sleep is a nightly problem, kind of these lifelong struggles for us, then definitely CBTI can be really, really effective. And I would say my number one kind of tool for people with ADHD and just people, I mean, even neurotypical people can benefit from this, are the amber glasses in the evening. I mean, it's just not realistic to ask everybody to disconnect
It
from all their
isn't.
lights. Like it's our, we're connected. The power went out in my neighborhood and I went outside and it was the first time I realized how much light there is at nighttime. Our street lights are big LED bright lights, lighting up at nighttime, which is not really normal for the human brain. So, using the tools like the amber glasses and shifting that circadian rhythm and taking care of that piece can be such a huge relief. That sometimes some of the other symptoms subside as well, and we stop worrying about sleep because we start to build a little confidence in our ability to fall asleep. And in that case, it means that's part of our program that we've adapted, our CBTI program, is we start with circadian rhythm correction and entrainment because that can be such a big boost and get people on the right track. And then if we start to have a little bit more confidence about our ability to sleep, some of the worrying naturally subsides as well. And so it makes a little space for us to learn these new skills and build that confidence over a period of time. So the amber glasses certainly can be an easy tool. Another sleep tool that I love is eye masks. So specifically contoured eye masks. They're really inexpensive. You can get them anywhere, but contoured, so they just sit on the outside of your orbital. Because I do find a lot of people, including myself, have a bit of like sensory issues, and anything on my face is going to feel a little weird. But the eye mask, because they're contoured, it doesn't rub your eyelashes, you don't feel it as much, and it creates a perfectly blackout environment, which is really hard to achieve without, duct tape on all the electronics and everything like that. And the beauty of an eye mask is it becomes a portable sleep tool. So you can take it with you and ensure wherever you are, you're getting a nice blackout environment. And then it becomes a bit of an association tool. So every time you put it on, your brain goes, okay, this is what I
Time
do
to go to
before I go to
bed.
sleep. Yeah.
Oh, pair it with the CPAP machine and you're going to be looking good for
Oh yeah,
bedtime.
very sexy. But you know what is sexy? Waking up refreshed.
That's right. You look fabulous in the morning.
That's right. You got your beauty sleep.
That's really funny. So my son is 12 and has struggled with sleep since he was a baby. And so can all of these things be applied to kids as well?
Yeah. Actually, for a lot of kids, a tool that I have found really effective for a lot of my clients, and I'm constantly hearing back from them saying, like, oh, I wish I would have known about this earlier, is tunable light bulbs. So, tunable lights are smart lighting systems. They used to be atrociously expensive and inaccessible for a lot of people, but now you can buy these light bulbs for, reasonable prices, $5 even for a tunable color changing light bulb. And kids really like this anyway, because it's a fun thing for them. But we can use that to change the lighting in our environment to help kids get that environmental signal. So, yes, we could get our kids to pop on the amber glasses, but sometimes compliance with that's just low and you find them in the toy box or wherever. But what we can do is set tunable lights. So they're usually programmable through Bluetooth, and you can set a schedule. So set and forget. So if your kid is neurodivergent, you're not neurodivergent, maybe everyone's kind of dropping the ball on the plans of going winding down in the evening. We can set our lights to change from a warm, evening light to really, really bright blue light in the morning, and then red, those warm, sunset colors in the
Sunset,
evening. And so those environmental signals of that color change helps entrain our circadian rhythm. And so without us having to plan to do it. So I usually say set the lights so they turn on in the morning when your kid wakes up. In the bright white blue color spectrum, you want lots of nice light early in the day, even early, late morning, early afternoon. And then as the day goes on, just like the sun would change in the sky, we want that color to shift to a warmer lighting. And then before bed, we want it dimmer, and we want that light to be as like warm and as red as possible. And a lot of kids will just naturally entrain their circadian rhythm from that lighting, that light exposure.
That's cool.
And they start sleeping better just as the lighting changes, which is such an easy tool, and doesn't require a lot of our planning and executive function. And the kids usually like the light, and then they get that environmental signal, right. It's time to get ready for bedtime. It can be a really helpful tool.
My sister just shared that so that her son, my nephew, he's six, and he has been having a lot of anxiety at bedtime. And so she just started using the Smiling Mind meditation app with him. There's some, it's from Australia. It's a great app. It's just like the other apps, but it's free. It's paid for by the Australian government. All the speakers have Australian accents, which is fun too.
Oh, I love
And
that.
they have a whole section for kids. And so he's been doing the kids' meditation, bedtime meditation. She said it's been a game changer for him and for them too. They don't have to spend much of their evening helping him, not be anxious at bedtime. She
That's a
said, well,
great
they don't even
skill.
hear from him anymore. He just
Yeah.
goes to bed.
That is such a great skill to teach your kids at such a young age. And the thing is, kids can learn to meditate and relax way better than we can. They learn it way faster. In my experience, they pick it up so well. So those sleep stories, the guided meditations, kids do great with them. They also do great with, especially neurodivergent kids, do great with body-based relaxation. So things like tightening and relaxing, so progressive muscle relaxation. Sometimes we call it spaghetti legs with kids, but it's making your body tight and rigid, like dry spaghetti, and then relax like cooked spaghetti. Or we start with like our foot, and we tighten up our foot, and then relax our foot, and then we tighten up our leg and relax our leg. And those types of body-based relaxation techniques, kids pick up. They're great for adults, but kids pick up on them so quickly. And once they learn those skills, like what a great thing to learn to know how to get yourself to sleep as from a young age. Like this should be something that's taught in school.
I agree.
You know, we always get the advice, make sure you have a good night's sleep, but nobody really
But what
tells
does
you
that
how.
mean?
Yeah, nobody tells you how to do it. So, yeah, those the relaxation tools for kids, so helpful. And we are seeing like unprecedented rates of kids having anxiety about bedtime, which has typically been more of an adult problem. But certainly since the pandemic, we've seen a lot of increase in like almost like true insomnia symptoms in little kids. And so the best way that we can address it is teaching them relaxation at night and how to downregulate themselves, and using, we have technology as part of our world. That's inevitable. We might as well make it work for us than using it, against us. So we have all this wonderful technology that we can use to actually improve our sleep. It's not the antithesis to good sleep. We just need to use it correctly.
Oh, that's great. So there's There's hope for everybody, kids and adults.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that. Well, is there anything else that you want to add that is something that our listeners need to hear?
I do want to kind of plug something that
Yeah.
SleepWorks is doing this year for the first time, and it's not for everyone, but there might be some of your listeners who are interested. SleepWorks is running sleep retreats.
Sleep
So if you
retreat.
a
I need
sleep
this.
retreat,
Tell me
and
more.
our first one will be in Costa Rica. We just returned from Costa Rica last week. We checked out the facilities, made sure that the sleeping arrangements were ideal, optimizing the environments. But our first sleep retreat will be held November 4th to 9th. It has a limited amount of seats left, but we are running it, and it's going to be a great opportunity for anybody that has ever gone on a vacation and come back and said, oh, I need a vacation from my
From my
vacation.
vacation. I
As busy
love
working
it.
professionals, so often we need that disconnection and that disengagement from work mode, but we go on vacation and we maybe eat too much and drink too much and sleep too little, and then come back and we don't actually feel like we're rejuvenated and ready to take on more work. It kind of depletes us a little bit. So we've designed a sleep retreat to incorporate basically intensive sleep therapy for, a week, an optimal environment to learn how to sleep, reprogram ourselves, and learn skills that we can take back from vacation and implement into our daily lives. We're offering an appointment before the retreat. So everyone that's on the retreat gets a tailored sleep plan for
Cool.
their trip. And then we have three sessions with myself or another sleep therapist after the retreat to help you incorporate your skills into your day-to-day life. And a big push is for people that are neurodivergent. It's going to be the best experience for people to learn, like in just, 5 days, how to sleep for the rest of their
That's really
lives.
cool.
And two out of three of us have are neurodivergent, so we are fully ready to incorporate that and offer, the executive function piece that we're missing out on and adapt everything so it's really accessible and we are setting people up for success with their sleep. So that's happening November 4th to 9th, I believe is the are the dates, and it's available to look at through our website, which is www.sleep-works.com. And there's lots of information about the retreat online, or you can reach out to me directly and I'm happy to answer any questions about it. But it's going to be an incredibly restful and rejuvenating experience. I'm so
Nice.
excited to be, the sleep police for 5 days.
I love it. That's great. Oh, cool. Well, thanks so much for coming on. It's been really fascinating. And also, I feel, I don't know. I know I already said this, but I feel hopeful for people. And especially after having that conversation with Roberto yesterday, I can see what a profoundly positive impact it can have on people. I mean, he's likely alive now because of it, and that's pretty powerful. So,
That is powerful.
yeah, I
Yeah.
really
Thank you
encourage.
so much for
Yeah.
having me
Oh,
and
yeah.
having this
Yeah.
conversation about sleep. It's my favorite thing to talk about, and I know it's an undervalued health behavior, but it is so important, and I'm so
Yeah.
grateful that you see the value in it as
Oh
well.
yeah. Well, you make it so accessible and not it seems surmountable. Is that a word? Like it's not
Yeah,
insurmountable. It seems like,
absolutely.
okay, this is something that we can actually there is something we can do about it and make a big difference, even if it's just a small improvement. So
Hey, and a small improvement goes far when we're doing it every single night, right? So it makes a big difference. Little changes
Yeah,
add
they
up.
really do. Great. All right. Well, thank you, Marley.
Thank you so much, Hannah.
And that's our show for today. Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen. Please check out the show notes for more sleep resources. As always, if you have questions or topic suggestions for me, you can reach out at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com. It helps us out a ton if you can rate us on Apple or Spotify. And even better, you can leave a written review on Apple so even more people can find us. You can follow and even set up auto downloads of Focus Forward on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Sign up for our subscriber email at beyondbooksmart.com/podcast. Our producer and editor is Sean Potts, and our content marketer is Justice Abbott. Many thanks to my colleague, Wendy Craven, for connecting me with Marley. And of course, thank you to Marley for all the fun we had talking about sleep. Thanks for listening, and I really hope you get a great night's sleep.